Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 119. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's guest co-host, David Oxford, of the Mega Man Network and Nintendo Force fame.
Hello, everyone.
We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We've got some new releases to talk about, as well as some news. Plus, we have this week's big topic, which is going to be the 30th anniversary celebration of Mega Man. That's right, we had some big Mega Man news a couple weeks ago, but this is a different Mega Man topic altogether, celebrating 30 years since the characters and the franchise's debut. But before we get to that, let's kick things off by discussing a significant new release on the Nintendo Switch, and that is Yooka-Laylee. Yooka-Laylee, of course, is a 3D platformer from the folks at Playtonic, that team being made up of former members of Rare. And yes, this game really does feel like the return of the 64-bit and 32-bit era platformer. It has wide-open themed worlds, trails of collectibles, lots of missions and quests. There are platforming challenges, races, puzzles, fetch quests, quizzes, boss battles. Basically everything you'd expect from a 3D platformer. Plus, you have an ever-growing moveset that includes familiar abilities like a high jump, hovering, a ground pound, and then there are even level-specific transformations so you can turn into, like, a plant or a snowplow that gives you certain abilities that are only usable in specific levels. There's also a unique play mechanic that has you expanding the worlds after you've visited them for the first time by trading in some of your collectibles. Plus, it has that familiar Rare trademark nonsense babble voices and the hit or miss humor. I put in about 8 hours with the game already, and so far it really does feel like it is fulfilling its promise of that old school type of 3D platformer. David, have you been playing it? And if so, what do you think?
I haven't played a whole lot of it, but I have played it on the Xbox One back when it came out, and if I'm being perfectly honest, outside of Super Mario 64, I do not have a whole lot of experience in this particular type of platform genre.
Okay.
What I have played, this feels like it fits right in, for better or for worse.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a long time for me as well. I hardly even remember Banjo-Kazooie or Banjo-Tooie at all, but yes, I get the same feeling. It really does feel like an accurate representation of that genre. And, you know, there's a lot of things I really like about this game. I think that Yooka and Laylee are appealing characters that rank right up there with some of the best in platforming. And I think the game looks pretty darn fantastic on Switch. You know, this is essentially an independent studio, but you would not know that by looking at the game. It looks pretty darn amazing. The frame rate is usually solid, and it also has an impressive soundtrack from David Wise. So yeah, all the ingredients are there for a really solid, impressive platformer. However, with that said, there are a few issues that I'm having with the game, specifically that it's not very user-friendly. And, you know, this stuff was, you know, sort of fine back in the Nintendo 64 era, but now things have come a long way, and so I'm discovering the fact that there's no map, and that's really inconvenient, and there's no fast travel or quest log, and that's really inconvenient too. And then the checkpoint system is not particularly user-friendly either. Like, usually you only get a checkpoint when you go in or out of a new area. And so sometimes you can traverse these rather large environments and then, you know, take an accidental fall somewhere, and then you end up getting sent way, way, way back. Like, early on in the game, I was fighting the first real boss you come to, and somehow during the fight, you know, normally if you die there, you start right at the boss, but somehow I got, like, knocked over a wall and fell, like, all the way off the bottom of the stage, and then it respawned me back at the beginning of the level. I'm like, oh man, that is not cool. That's not cool at all. And then on top of that, there are camera problems as well. The way the 3D gaming has progressed these days, you kind of take the camera for granted, but this one still has a tendency to kind of get stuck in some places or not really necessarily work exactly the way you want. And you know, you kind of forget how far we've come when it comes to the camera since, you know, those true N64 days. Dave, did you have any issues with the game?
I don't know that I got far enough to really be able to pick apart anything, but from what I understand, it sounds like it's a pretty faithful recreation of the platforming games of the time. And it doesn't really evolve much beyond that, except maybe graphically to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's the thing. Maybe is that it's a little too faithful to some of those roots in some ways. I guess the other issue I'm having with the game, though, is that the progression through the stages is a little bit awkward, because there's a lot of stuff to do, but you discover that some of it you can't actually do until later. So you're exploring this world, and there are, like, you know, 25 pages to collect. Pages is the main collectible in the game, because it's about this magical book, and all the pages have been torn out, so you're collecting these pages that are all over the place. And you know, you can get a whole bunch of them, but there are some of them you actually can't do until you unlock moves later, because in each world you can unlock specific moves. And so there's not really any indication when you can move on to the next world because you've collected enough, nor is there any indication when you're up against a challenge that you just can't do yet because you don't have the move. And so I've probably spent, you know, an hour or two trying to get some of these things, and it's completely futile because there's no way I can do it until I go on to a later level and then come back with the ability I need. And that can be kind of frustrating.
I think I remember running into some instances like that, but I think my mindset at the time, because like I said, I never got to play a whole lot, as many of these platformers as I wanted, mm-hmm. but thinking back to Super Mario 64, which was like the originator, the benchmark, and I mean, I remember Bob-omb Battlefield, I believe there was some stuff where you kind of need the wing cap that you don't get until later to fully explore it, so I think I probably took it for granted, and Yooka-Laylee is par for the course.
Well, I do remember getting really stuck with one challenge early on in Super Mario Sunshine that required Yoshi, but I hadn't unlocked him yet, and I consider that a design flaw. But to me, this feels more like Metroid. In that game, obstacles are made very clear so you know you need to come back later, but in this game, it's hard to tell if it's an impassable obstacle or if I just need to be a better player. So as it stands now, I'm currently in World 2, and I've collected 15 of these 25 pages, but I really don't know if that's enough for me to move on to the next world, or if I can collect the remaining 10 with my current moveset. It just would have been nice to know all that.
One thing I was a little uncertain about with the progression, though, was the way you can expand a world after you acquire so much.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like it was kind of hard to figure out whether you should expand first and then proceed, or proceed first and come back and then expand, or if it matters at all. And
yeah, I mean, that's one of the cool things I like about the game, and it's unique in that way. And I like the fact that you kind of do have that freedom. You can, you know, get to a world right away, and if you have enough pages, you can expand it right from the beginning. But I kind of like it personally to go into the world without expanding it, you know, see what I can do there, explore as much as I can, then go back out to the hub, use the pages to expand it. And I find that that way it just helps me explore better. I can, you know, cover like all the territory that's currently available and then cover all the additional territory after that without being overwhelmed by everything all at once. And like I said, you do have that freedom to choose. And I like that freedom, but it really is up to the player. You can do it either way.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I guess that is one sign of the evolution we were talking about earlier of the classic concept. So maybe if they do more of this Yooka-Laylee stuff, they'll do more of that.
Yeah, if they do continue it, and I certainly wouldn't mind from what I've played so far, yeah, that would be a cool thing to expand on, pun probably intended. Anyway, I've certainly been enjoying the game so far, but I consider it more of, you know, maybe on a Nintendo Power rating scale, say a 7 or a 7.5, you know, which is good, by the way, that's a good score. But I consider it more along those lines than, say, an 8 or a 9. So not great, but still, you know, very good and quite enjoyable thus far.
Sounds good.
However, Yooka-Laylee is not the only new game I've been playing. I've also been playing a recent release on the Nintendo 3DS. And that game is River City Rival Showdown. This one actually came out last month around Thanksgiving, but I didn't have a chance to play it until now. However, over the past week, I've been able to sit down with the game, play it a whole bunch, take it all in, beat up a lot of punks, and really get to find out what this latest River City title is all about. And the way I would describe it is some very familiar beat-em-up action mixed with substantial RPG elements, as the River City series is known for. It definitely has some new twists this time. This is not a remake of the old River City Ransom. It's an all-new story. Once again, it is about high school delinquents trying to beat each other up, which is really weird when you think about it. But this time, you have only 3 in-game days to get to the bottom of what is happening. So the game is sort of like Majora's Mask meets a beat-em-up, in that there is this countdown timer constantly going on, and certain events happen at certain places at certain times of the day, and so you can go there, you can engage in these events, or you can choose not to. When you're not at one of these events, or in between events, you can wander the game world, talk to NPCs, go shopping, and of course beat up rival gangs to earn cash and experience points, which you can use to boost your stats and acquire new moves. Some previous River City games were all about eating food to boost your stats, but in this game you allocate skill points that you earn when you level up, or you can just boost your stats by buying new outfits. Also, it's worth noting that this game has an SP gauge that's used to limit how much you can use some of your special moves, so that means you won't be able to just spam your most powerful moves all the time. David, you didn't happen to pick this one up, did you?
Unfortunately, no. I have fond memories of the original and maybe some warped memories as well, but no, I haven't gotten to play this one yet, but I would very much like to.
Yeah, and if you do like beat-em-ups and you like the River City series, I probably would say it's a recommendation. Although, early on, I wasn't necessarily thinking that was the case, because when I first started, I was kind of frustrating, because it's really easy to find yourself in a fight where you're just totally underpowered, and there were some battles where I was only dishing out, like, you know, 1 HP worth of damage to my enemies, and they're doing, like, you know, 20 or 30, and I'm like, oh man, this is crazy. So, you know, on that first day where this is happening, you know, I just wasn't quite sure what I was doing. I had to run away from a lot of fights, and I was like, boy, if this is what the game is like, I'm not sure I'm going to really have fun here. But once you do start figuring out how the world works, and you know, you start taking on the challenges that you can actually overcome, and you're leveling up, then it can become a lot more fun. And by the second day, I really felt like I could hold my own against most opponents. Another thing I really like about this game is that combat feels just a little bit tighter than past River City Ransom games. You know, it sort of felt a little bit squishy in those other titles, and I guess it's kind of true here, but it still feels just a bit more solid than it did in the past. There are also tons of moves to acquire. However, on the negative side, I would say it is a little cheap. Enemies have a tendency to trap you by getting in really close, so you sort of can't hit them, but they can hit you, and they will also, you know, hit you from behind, and sometimes it can be really hard to turn around and nail them when they're just all ganging up on you and hitting you where you absolutely can't hit them back. There are some desperation moves I probably should have used more, and that might have helped me get out of that situation, but that still can be a little bit frustrating at times. Also, another thing that's a little bit cheap is that when you beat up enemies, after you knock them out, they recover with temporary invincibility, just like the player does. And I'm not really sure why it does. I mean, when you do it to a human, it's like, okay, well, this is because we don't want to be unfair to the player. But when you're doing it to the computer character, it's like, well, what's that benefit? That doesn't really seem right. Still, using your skills to overcome the odds is a big part of the fun, and the fights are still enjoyable, you know, even if sometimes it doesn't seem entirely fair. Another thing that's pretty cool about the game is that it includes a Double Dragon Duel mode, which is a one-on-one fighting game mode using the in-game graphics and engine, and it actually plays a part in the main story. There's a part where you have to go to the arcade and, you know, challenge some other street punks to a arcade game in this arcade called Double Dragon Duel. And of course, you know, that was also made by Technos, the same people that made River City Ransom, so they're all kind of tying it together. But when you play this Double Dragon Duel mode, it actually has a retro arcade feel with scan lines. It's also got some Double Dragon music, but also has, you know, the River City Ransom character design. So it's this weird mix between Double Dragon and River City Ransom. I do kind of like it just because I'm a Double Dragon fan.
That does sound like a fun combo.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. As for the main game itself, I do like the graphics. They're pretty solid. The 3D effects are nice. The music is pretty good. The game also has a 2-player co-op mode, but unfortunately I was not able to try that out because, you know, 2 players must both have a copy of the game.
Of course.
Another thing that is pretty cool about it is that after you beat the game, after you survive all 3 days and, you know, get your ending, and there are multiple endings, by the way, probably based on which events you see and complete, you get this encyclopedia, and not only does it tell you all about the characters and places in the game, but it also tells you about all of the events, even the ones that you may have missed. So then you have like this whole checklist of things you can do if you decide to replay it. So you can restart, play the game a second time. You get to keep all your stats, all your items, all your levels, and then you have this checklist of all these things you can do. Like, okay, well, I missed this the first time around. So there's a whole bunch of replayability. Like I said, multiple endings. And, you know, I wasn't really sure how much I was going to like this game at first, but overall, it started slow, and it ended up really growing on me, and I definitely look forward to playing it again.
And based on that recommendation, I'm looking forward to hopefully trying it myself someday.
All right, I hope you do. It's pretty darn cool.
I was going to ask, one thing I was going to say is, like, you know, that I think, like, when I was reading about River City Ransom and Nintendo Power, like, it gave me, like, kind of a warped view of high school. It's like, is this what high school is going to be like? Everybody beating each other up? Where are the adults? Where's the police? What is this?
Ha, you know, I find it to be weird, too. It never affected my perception of high school or anything like that, but it does seem to be a popular motif in Japanese games and fiction, like Capcom's Rival Schools series. And I do kind of wonder where this whole romanticized high school delinquent thing came from. It's a strange fantasy to have, and it does seem weird in the game at first, but pretty soon you just learn to roll with it, and you're beating up bad guys with suplexes and uppercuts, and it's fun, and that's all that really matters.
Nice.
That does it for the game impressions for this week. Let's move along to some news. First of all, I wanted to make mention that Pokemon Crystal is confirmed for Virtual Console on the Nintendo 3DS. It is coming out on January 26th. Personally, I have never actually played this version of the game. I did play Gold and, well, mostly Silver, but I don't think I ever actually played Crystal. So this is pretty darn cool, especially for myself. Your thoughts, David?
Not too much. I've dabbled a bit in Pokemon, but I haven't gotten to play too much, particularly of that generation. I have heard it said that, like, with Crystal coming to the 3DS, it basically renders Silver and Gold obsolete, though.
That's kind of true. That is kind of true. You know, back then, it was usually the third version, was sort of the ultimate version. But, you know, people have had Gold and Silver a while, so, you know, maybe it is time to add the third one to the roster. I'm just glad that they're giving people that option. You know, it's never been on Virtual Console before, so it is a pretty darn nice addition to the Virtual Console lineup, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, but until they decide to go back and add Litten to that generation, I'm looking more ahead to the more recent stuff.
Understandable. Well, perhaps this other classic release is more up your alley then. You know, we haven't got official confirmation from Nintendo yet, but it appears that Versus Super Mario Brothers for Switch is going to be coming out this week. The folks at Hamster have made it official for Japan, but there's no word yet that it is indeed coming out in the US this week. However, this anticipated title, you know, could basically be out by the time you hear this. This is one I've been looking quite forward to. What about you?
Oh, most definitely. Ever since Nintendo came up with the Virtual Console, and especially the bizarrely titled Virtual Console Arcade, of which there were absolutely no Nintendo arcade games
right.
I've basically been waiting for this. I remember seeing Versus Super Mario Brothers in some arcades and at movie theaters, and it was, like, just so different from the... But not so different, but different enough to be noticeable and harder that I've wanted to have a good chance to just sit down with it and test my skills.
Yeah, I felt exactly the same way, and so when they announced that Arcade Archives was going to have Versus Super Mario Brothers, it definitely became number one on my list.
Oh yes, I was singing for that one.
Of course, a big part of the challenge comes from the fact that this game combines Super Mario Brothers with stages from the Lost Levels, and I have not played this game in forever, so I really look forward to trying it again in the comfort of my own home.
Same here. Definitely the same here. Or on the go. Hey, it's the Switch. Why not?
That's true. That's very, very true. Good point.
Take it to an arcade if there's still one around and just kind of play in front of the operator and say, like, yeah, you could have had this.
Sure. Why not? Another bit of interesting Nintendo-related news. First Four Figures has announced and revealed their new Shovel Knight statue. Shovel Knight is a fantastic game, great DLC, and I think this statue is a fantastic representation of the character. It's got him standing there, you know, the shovel implanted in the ground, his right leg is bent, and his foot's resting on the edge of the shovel. This thing looks super impressive. Have you had a chance to check this one out?
I got a chance to see it on Checkpoint yesterday, and yeah, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, it looks really, really great. There are three versions of the statue. There is a regular one, there is a gold one, and then there is an exclusive version, which comes with an alternate fishy head for Shovel Knight, which is really quite bizarre. The bad part about this, of course, is that like almost all First Four Figures statues, it is quite expensive. Each version of the statue sells for $300, so I will not be buying one anytime soon. However, if you do have that kind of money to spend, you can head on over to firstfourfigures.com and get your pre-orders in now.
Sorry, did you say how big it was?
No, I did not, but it is 15.5 inches tall, so you're getting you know, a reasonably sizable mini statue for that price.
Very nice. I bet it looks very striking on any mantle.
Without a doubt. It's just too bad I would have to win the lottery to be able to afford one.
I hear that.
And the last bit of news I wanted to cover is a new musical release. You know, we're going to be talking about Mega Man as our big topic in just a little bit, but this new audio release comes from Mega Man composer Manami Matsume and Brave Wave Productions. You can get it now as a digital download. You can check it out on their website. And from what I have heard so far, it seems pretty darn fantastic. Have you had a chance to listen to it yet?
I have not, actually.
Well, you totally should. It's an original album, but it's very Mega Man-ish, and you can really feel the composer's 8-bit roots. It feels right at home alongside some of your favorite classic gaming soundtracks. And you know, for our holiday gift guide, I was recommending the Chip Tanaka CD a couple weeks ago, but in my opinion, this one is even better. So if you are a fan of chiptune music, go give it a listen. Maybe consider giving it a download. There's also going to be a physical edition coming in the near future. So yeah, it seems really, really good and definitely worth investigating if you're into those sorts of things.
Yeah, Manami's done some great stuff in the past and
Sure has.
Even in the more recent times. So this should definitely be one to keep an ear out for.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that takes care of the news for this week. Let's move on to a little bit of listener mail. This letter comes from listener Shu, and he writes, "In the latest episode, you guys talked about your favorite uses of Amiibo.
Amiibo!
I actually really liked using Amiibo in Smash Brothers. It was a lot of fun doing team battles where each person had one of their favorite characters on their team. It finally made the dream of Rob being a little robot that plays games with you a reality. As to the future of Amiibo, remember a while back when they had toyed with the idea of smaller, less expensive Amiibo? It'd be cool to see little blind boxes of items, baddies, or smaller characters for $5 or less, similar to what they did with the Pokemon Rumble games. Also, regarding Pokemon Amiibo, it's not just that you would need to buy all 800 plus Pokemon, but to have a complete collection, you would need to buy the shiny versions as well." So, to respond to this, first of all, regarding last week's show and the Smash Brothers Amiibo functionality, I actually liked it a lot more than my co-host did. That was CJ's pick for poor functionality, and while I didn't love it, I thought it could be very useful, especially if you used the Amiibo-based characters to help harvest trophies for you. Second, I hate to say it, but I despise this idea of blind-boxed Amiibo. I could not think of anything more torturous than not knowing what you're getting. You know, when they did these smaller, less expensive Amiibo, that's what they did with the cards. Of course, those are, you know, blind-packaged as well. And that's one of the reasons I have stayed away from them. But man, I would hate... I mean, you think Amiibo were hard to find in the past. I just can't imagine having to go through blind boxes trying to catch them all. That would absolutely drive me up a wall. So for myself personally, I definitely hope they don't do that. Especially when you bring up Pokemon Rumble. Those were impossible to get if you were trying to collect the whole set. That was really tough, or you end up spending a small fortune on eBay. Yeah, this is something I really hope they don't do.
I don't think I even saw the Pokemon Rumble stuff in stores. And as far as blind boxed stuff, these things are hard enough to find when I know what I'm looking for.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think we are on the exact same page with this one, Mr. Oxford. On the other hand, you know, just having the idea of, you know, maybe some smaller, cheaper amiibo that was things like items or minor characters, I'm definitely not against that. If there's a way to make these things at half the price point they are now and just make them a little bit smaller, but still cool, then I'm totally down with that.
Now, here's an idea. Just close your eyes with me here and imagine. Amiibo cereal boxes.
I think you might be onto something there. Yes, yes, I just think you might be.
You could send me a check in the mail, Nintendo.
You haven't happened to find the cereal yet, have you?
Oh, of course not. They don't sell it here. It's a U.S.-only thing.
Okay. Well, I have not been able to find it, even being here in the States. You're up in Canada, for the listeners who don't know. But yeah, I've not had any luck finding it myself either, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I've had some people keeping an eye out for me. They haven't had any luck either.
Yeah, I haven't seen it here at all. As what she was saying about the Pokemon amiibo, yeah, I suppose that would complicate matters even more. Like I said last week, you know, it's a rabbit hole I'm not sure I'm going to go down, because yes, in addition to all those regular ones, you totally could do the shiny ones as well. And being the sucker I am, I would totally buy them. So, you know, maybe it's best I just don't go that way, even though they would stand to make a fortune if they did. Okay, that takes care of our letters for this week. Let's take an intermission, and then we come back. We will discuss this week's big topic, which is Mega Man's 30th anniversary. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the 30th anniversary of Mega Man. That's right, it has been 30 years since the launch of Mega Man, or at least since the launch of Rockman in Japan, which originally came out for the Famicom on December 17th, 1987. Personally, I've always thought there was something a little suspicious about how they claim that's also the release date for Mega Man in North America, considering it usually took about 6 months for a game to come out in the US after it came out in Japan. But whatever, the official word is that Mega Man also came out in the US in December 1987, and thus we are celebrating the anniversary of Mega Man also. Of course, after the original series, then we had Mega Man X, we had Mega Man Legends, we had Battle Network and Star Force and Mega Man Zero and Mega Man ZX and probably a whole bunch of other titles and spin-offs that I'm not going to get into right now. But yes, Mega Man has gone on to become one of the most prolific characters in video game history and also just happens to be one of my personal favorites. David, obviously you have quite a connection to the character as well.
Yes, I do.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about what turned you into such a Mega Man fan? How did your relationship, so to speak, with Mega Man get started?
The earliest thing I remember is that, for whatever reason, my parents seemed interested in the upcoming Mega Man 2. And I thought, okay, well, if it's 2, maybe I should look at 1. And between that and some Nintendo Power coverage, I rented the first game. And to be honest, I wasn't terribly impressed. But, I mean, it was neat and all, but it was also really hard. But I decided, you know what? With this buzz around Mega Man 2 and how different Mario 1 and Mario 2 are, let's see how this plays out. And when Mega Man 2 came out, I gave it a try, and it just totally clicked.
Totally fell in love with the Mega Man 2, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. And it's just, you know, been me and Blue Bomber fun ever since.
Well, I can certainly relate to that, because when the original Mega Man came out, I didn't really know about it either. And, you know, back then, there weren't a whole lot of ways to hear about games. There was certainly no internet to talk about them. And so I think my first ever exposure to Mega Man was probably in the first issue of Nintendo Power. I probably read something about it in, you know, that big black official Nintendo Player's Guide, but nothing really clicked with me. But I remember seeing a screenshot in the classified information section of Nintendo Power number one.
Yes.
And, you know, I think he was in, you know, maybe the Gutsman colors or the Elecman colors.
Elecman, I believe.
Yes, he was like, you know, brown and yellow, and he did not look like regular Mega Man. And I saw this picture, and I'm like, what is this guy? He looks like some sort of weird-looking monkey or something. And, you know, somewhere along the line, I saw the box art, and I'm like, this game looks terrible. So I saw the pictures of Nintendo Power, and I saw the box art, and I'm like, this game is going to be awful. Plus, it's called Mega Man. What a ridiculous name, Mega Man. Pah. So, you know, a few months later, you know, Christmas rolls around, and this was, you know, the first Christmas I ever had an NES in 1988. And so, obviously, I was very, very young. But for that Christmas, I got Zelda 2, The Adventure of Link. And I was super excited about that. I've been waiting for that game for a long time. And obviously, it's Zelda. It was, you know, a major release. It was a game that, you know, people had been wanting for, you know, what felt like, you know, an eternity. You know, the previous game hadn't come out that long, really, so they weren't waiting that long. But it sure seemed like it when you were a kid. So anyway, I got Zelda 2, and I couldn't have been more happy. And then one of my neighbors comes over, Nick, and he's like, hey, what'd you guys get for Christmas? I'm like, I got Zelda 2. He's like, oh, yeah? Well, I got Mega Man. I'm like, Mega Man? That game looks stupid. He's like, here, well, you should check it out. And so I tried the game, and I played it, and I was blown away. I could not have been more wrong. I absolutely loved it. I loved everything about it. I loved the challenge. I loved the idea of, you know, defeating the enemy robot masters and taking their weapons. And, you know, the game felt so different from other things I had played at the time. Like, I was so used to the way that Mario moved and the way that when Mario would jump in the air, he still had momentum going. And so, like, the way that in Mega Man, when you jump, if you stop pushing on the directional pad, you know, his momentum totally stops. And so just trying to adapt from, you know, Mario games to Mega Man, it was so weird. I like couldn't jump anything because I would stop holding the direction like halfway across a pit because that's what I would do in Mario, so I didn't overshoot. But in this, I would do that and I would just stop moving and I'd fall right into the pit and die. You know, getting through the Elecman stage was so hard for me because of that. But, you know, I learned. It taught me a lot. And mostly, though, I learned that I was an idiot for not being interested in Mega Man. And then I decided I wanted to get this game. I could not find it anywhere. It was just impossible to get. We didn't have a Toys R Us where I lived, and I just, no stores had it. So I was pretty much out of luck until Mega Man 2 came out. You know, I knew about that one. I was totally on board. Couldn't wait to get it. And, you know, that was the first one that I owned. But, yeah, I was already a true blue Mega Man fan, you know, even before Mega Man 2 hit stores. I did finally pick up the first Mega Man used for, you know, what seemed like a small fortune of $30 from a friend at school. But, yeah, I didn't find it in stores for, like, you know, another couple years later or something. So that's how I got my start with Mega Man.
I don't know if I ever saw the first one in stores, but I did eventually get it for $10 complete at a flea market.
Oh, nice, nice. Yeah, I remember, you know, I did finally find it at some Toys R Us, which was, you know, probably 45 miles from my home, and, you know, it was like $30. I'm like, oh, that's the same I paid for it used. Oh, frick. Anyway, that's how my love of Mega Man started. Here we are, you know, all these years later, and so to celebrate the occasion, we are going to take a trip down Mega Memory Lane and discuss some of our favorite aspects of the franchise. Our favorite robot masters, our favorite classic Mega Man weapons, and of course, our favorite Mega Man games. And by that, I mean all Mega Man games across all franchises, all iterations of the character are valid. Let's do this thing and talk about our individual top fives. Get your weapons ready. David, what is your number five favorite Mega Man game?
Oh man, I don't want to commit to like, be fully committal on this because it's like trying to pick your favorite children.
Oh yeah, totally. And, I mean, this, you know, this could change, you know, tomorrow or next week. Yeah. But for now, this is as good as we can do. So yeah, no worries there.
Yeah, it was a tough call.
Only Dr. Wily will judge you.
I'm thinking maybe Mega Man ZX sticks out in my mind. Actually, the first one.
Oh, okay. an interesting choice, but a very good game. What do you like about that one?
Well, I'm a sucker for Power Rangers and Henshin-type heroes, so combining that with Mega Man is just like an instant, like, sell for me. I also like how it kind of follows on from the Zero series, like, with the art style, but it's not quite as grim, and it kind of brings back kind of a light of hope to the world after everything it had been through. And it's got a nice kind of Metroid sort of way of exploration about it.
Yeah, I definitely like the Metroidiness to that one.
Yeah. What has it edging out its sequel, Advent, though? Advent has the better map system, but I absolutely hate the way you can morph into the enemies there.
Yeah, where you just sort of turn into a boss completely.
Yeah, it's like sounds like a great idea on paper, but the difference is, for me, with the forms you can assume in the first game, which are also in the second, to be fair, but you can basically switch between them, and if you're good, which I practiced with them, you can basically just kind of switch on the fly and just never stop moving. But the way that, like, say, the big stag or the giant whale or whatever you turn into, it just, like, you cannot just keep going around in these forms. So you have to stop and change back, and that just, like, really disrupts the flow to me. It has some neat puzzles as a result, but that was annoying. That in the last stage was...
Yeah, there's a lot that I've already forgotten about Mega Man ZX and Mega Man ZX Advent, but I do remember turning into a whale and walking around and feeling that does feel a little bit out of place in ZX Advent. Nonetheless, ZX, I agree with you. It's definitely an excellent, excellent game again, or a Z-excellent game, I should say. Yes, a Z-excellent game. My number five game is a Mega Man Zero game. I'm going with Mega Man Zero 2.
Ooh.
Of course, you know, Mega Man Zero was known for being super duper tough as nails, and this game certainly is. It's challenging, it requires immense precision, it requires a lot of skill and pattern memorization, but I loved it. And it felt a lot more fair than the difficulty in Mega Man Zero 1. So, you know, whereas I thought there was a lot of good stuff in Zero 1, but just, you know, kind of fell onto the frustrating side, this one just felt like they got the challenge, you know, really spot on. Plus, the game looks gorgeous, I love the story, and it features a really good variety of new weapons for the main character. So, I absolutely love that one. For some reason, significantly head and shoulders above the other titles in the Zero series. So I am going with that as my number five Mega Man game.
Yeah, Zero 2 is a good pick. I can understand it. It has one of my favorite tracks in the series. I believe it's called Power Bomb. No relation to the wrestling move. But if I had to pick one Zero game out of the series, I'd probably go with Zero 3. But yeah, Zero 2 is definitely a strong contender there.
All right, what's your number four?
Ah, this was a tough one. I am going to say probably Mega Man 3.
Okay. And you're talking about the NES version of Mega Man 3, right?
As opposed to?
The Game Boy one.
Oh, yes, yes. Sorry, yeah. The Game Boy one's good, but no, definitely mean the NES one.
Okay.
And certainly not the Tiger one, or the High Tech Expressions DOS one.
Right. But yeah, Mega Man 3, a great game. Hard to argue with that one.
Yeah, it's usually an argument between which is best between that and Mega Man 2. I'm bumping this one just slightly for two main reasons. One is that, technically speaking, it's an unfinished game to hear the developers talk about it.
I've heard that as well.
And I have to admit, I've always been curious what the finished one would look like. I hope that we would have gotten a Mega Man 3 powered up that would have maybe given us an idea, but that never happened.
Yeah, I imagine there probably would have been Doc Robot stages for, you know, all of them instead of just the four stages we got.
Yeah, that definitely would have been cool. At the same time, those Doc Robot stages, it's like, not that I don't like them. They actually provide a nice challenge. But at the same time, they also pad out the length of the game a bit. So it's like, if I just want, like, you know, something to pop in and, like, you know, play real quick, Mega Man 3 is probably not the quickest entry in the series to get through.
Well, it's not, but that's actually what I like about this one, is that it is extra beefy, and it doesn't adhere to the usual formula of just the Robot Masters and Wily. It has this extra stuff for these Doc Robot stages, and then your totally tiny mini Breakman stage in there as well. And, you know, I really liked the fact that it just kind of mixed things up that way. On top of that, this is also the game that introduced the slide maneuver, which is great. It introduced Proto-Man and introduced Rush. So lots of really important firsts in this title, you know, to go along with the you know, traditional Mega Man gameplay.
Now I'm starting to think I should have made it my number three.
Well, I certainly don't blame you for putting it where you did, because it is my number four pick as well. So,
Oh, well, that's convenient.
Yeah, so great Mega Minds Think Alike or something.
But yeah, I do love all the stuff that it brought to the table and would love to see more like that. But yeah, like I said, I'm kind of torn with that, so.
Okay. Well, do you want to go on to what is your number three pick then?
I'm going to go ahead and say Mega Man 2.
Hmm, interesting.
Yeah, it is a tough one. Like I said, I'm probably going to regret saying this tomorrow, but I really like the original Mega Man, but like Mega Man 2 is just where the series arrived and it established so much of what was to come.
Well, it was really the sweet spot. I mean, they had some great ideas with the original Mega Man, and it's like, okay, now we are going to refine and enhance and polish this, you know, and add in a password so you don't have to leave your NES on overnight anymore.
Yeah, plus the introduction of E-Tanks and the other special items was good.
Yes, yes, very much so.
Of course, the first did have the magnet beam, but I think the jet sled and the other items were handier.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, for me, that's where the extra polish comes in. You know, plus, you know, I think they really were able to improve the graphics quite significantly over the original. You know, they increased the number of Robot Masters from 6 to 8. And it's just, you know, a really cool selection of levels and bosses and weapons. And, you know, I thought it all came together really, really well.
Agreed. It's pretty close to a perfect package, except for, like, you know, just a few hiccups here and there. Looking at you, Boo Beam Trap.
All right. Well, moving on to my number three, I am going with Mega Man 5 on the Game Boy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the cool thing about this one is that unlike the previous Mega Man Game Boy games, it was not just a remix of the NES titles. It wasn't just going through familiar territory with familiar levels and familiar bosses. It brought in the Star Droids, which were a whole new cast of robotic enemies, you know, based on the various planets. And to go along with them were brand new levels, brand new weapons. Instead of his arm cannon, he had a new weapon called the Mega Arm, which, you know, when you fired a charge attack, he would actually launch his fist off his body and use that as a projectile. It could also be used to grab items, you know, once you powered it up, that is. So that was definitely cool to have. But yeah, I just like these new characters. I liked expanding the mythos beyond the usual Iceman, Fireman, etc. stuff. Having all these characters named after and inspired by the planets, I thought was really cool. And I just added a new dimension and a new threat. And you know, I felt like this was, you know, certainly the best portable Mega Man experience at the time, and I think that's part of the reason that I like it so much.
That's a good pick, one I probably should have thought of, although I don't think I've actually beaten it, because it took me so long to get it in the first place. It was just a hard one to find before the Virtual Console came around.
Yeah, at the time, you know, I remember getting it, you know, pretty much right on day one, so I don't know what it would have been, you know, had I waited a little bit more. But yeah, I remember spending lots of fun hours playing that on the Game Boy, and trying to save it from those Star Droids. Okay, so what do you have for number two?
Mega Man Legends.
Ah, okay. Well, this is a Nintendo podcast, so how about Mega Man 64?
Yeah, okay, we can go with that.
All right. So, number two is Mega Man 64. That's an interesting choice. How come?
It was just one of those cases. How do I put this? I guess you could say it kind of taught me like a powerful life lesson at the time, because when I saw some preview footage in like some magazines back then, it seemed so odd and it just wasn't quite working for me. But when I finally got to try it out for myself at a Microplay back in the day, it was like the Japanese version, it just clicked instantly with me and I fell in love, and it's just kind of taught me, okay, you know what, don't, you know, pass judgment on early, like how game looks early on and stuff, and that served me well for Mega Man Battle Network. Like the initial sketch of him with that mask and stuff, and just the early art didn't really do it for me. And I was like, okay, remember Mega Man Legends, and you know, that worked out for me.
Yes, that is definitely a lesson that Mega Man has taught me as well. You know, don't judge things by their early looks, don't judge things by the early impressions. There could be a lot more than what you think is going on. So yeah, that's a lesson that he has taught me as well from lots of other games.
And it's just a fantastic kind of action RPG kind of game as well. It's maybe a little rough, you know, coming out like right around the same time Ocarina of Time did and standing in that shadow. But the cast, the voice acting, so much of it was just so endearing.
Oh, the voice acting. I don't know. There's a lot of things I love about that game, but some of the voice acting, kind of is hilarious. In a world surrounded by endless water.
Well,
and then the other one, I think, was it the mayor who says, I'm like, thank you so much.
That would be the artist, actually.
Oh, the artist. Okay. That's right. That's right. Every time you bring an artifact, right?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Those I thought could stand some fixing, but I'm not going to knock your pick.
Hey, compared to the voice acting that we'd been getting up until then.
Well, maybe I've just been spoiled by some of the Sega CD games I've been playing at the time, but to each their own, I suppose. I guess that brings us to my number two then, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I am going with Mega Man X. I have sung the praises of Mega Man X many times on here before, most recently probably when it came out on the Super NES Classic, but, you know, it's a game that I love in almost every way. You know, that built upon the original, continued that same winning formula of platforming and action and stealing the boss's weapons, but added cool maneuvers like the wall jump, you know, added, of course, 16-bit visuals, you know, age it up just a little bit, putting in these cool new perspectives with the story of the Reploids and Zero and all that good stuff. And, you know, really just bring Mega Man to the next level, so to speak. So, you know, absolutely one of my favorites would be Mega Man X.
That's a good pick.
All right. So what is your number one?
Well, it took a lot of contemplation and self-reflection, and it may feel kind of obvious, but I think we all know what number one would have to be. I mean, could it really be anything but Rockman Crossover?
Even if I believed you, this is Power Pros, and we're only counting games on Nintendo systems here.
Okay, no, seriously though, actually my number one is Mega Man X. As games go, as Mega Man games go, it's about as close to perfect as you can get. I don't feel like there are, like, any, like, you know, chinks in its armor. Even, like, trying to, like, you know, improve on it with Maverick Hunter X, it felt like there were steps being taken back despite, like, improvements there. I'm at a loss trying to think of anything that's, like, really, truly wrong with it. And it's just, you know, it's a level that I don't think Capcom was ever able to touch upon again in the seven games to follow. If I was going to recommend one Mega Man game for somebody to play who's never played a Mega Man game before, it would probably be Mega Man X.
Well, it's definitely a fine choice. Like I said, it is absolutely one of my favorites, one of my all-time faves on the Super NES. And like you said, they really were never able to improve upon it. They knocked it out of the park right out of the gate. You know, they always tried to add extra stuff in the follow-ups, but, you know, it was never really necessary because that original effort was just so darn good. You know, being able to track down those power-ups and, you know, having just that little bit of non-linearity and that little bit of exploration, you know, being able to get, you know, charged up abilities for the special weapons in addition to your arm cannon, all that stuff was just so brilliant. And it ends up being, you know, absolutely one of the best Mega Man games. Yeah, that is a fantastic choice.
They truly outdid themselves with that one.
Mm-hmm.
And that really leaves me to wonder now, if that was your number two, with all that said, what could be your number one?
Oh, well, I figured that was obvious. I am going with Mega Man 2, the one that, you know, didn't start everything for me, but, you know, it was, you know, the first Mega Man game that I owned. And it's almost a cliche now, you know, how many people, you know, love that game and, you know, consider it a favorite. And whereas with Mega Man X, you know, that one got everything right out of the park. Mega Man 2, as I already mentioned, you know, it took the groundwork that had already been laid in Mega Man 1, made just a few more adjustments, and really, in my opinion, polished it to perfection. Graphics, sound, control, difficulty, stage design, bosses, it's all spot on. And I consider it to be not just my favorite Mega Man game, but probably my favorite NES game as well.
But you have to admit that Boo Beam Trap is kind of a anger-inducing, right?
I admit nothing. Sure, it's tough to get through without running out of crash bombs, but figuring out how to do that is part of the fun, as is overcoming the challenge. Plus, let's not forget how fantastic that final boss fight is and how amazing it was the first time you saw that hidden extra final level appear on the map. It's just so brilliant.
All right.
Okay, that takes care of our individual top five Mega Man titles. Let's move down to our next list, and that is our favorite Robot Masters. Of course, instead of talking about all the Mega Man games, we are just talking about the classic series here. So no Mavericks, No Navis, just the traditional Robot Masters. And before we do the countdown, this is in no particular order, but let's jump in and discuss our favorites. David, why don't you start again? What's one of your faves?
When people ask me who my favorite Robot Master is, there's usually just one that I always turn to, and that would be Turbo Man.
Ah, Turbo Man is definitely cool. He's on my list as well.
Nice, nice.
Probably the reason for that is because he's a flippin' transformer. He turns into a car.
Exactly, yes. I don't know. He's one I've actually managed to get a little, not quite an action figure, more like one of those Gashapon things, thanks to a friend.
Ah. And oh, nice, nice.
There are some cards from the Universal Fighting System that show him in both modes, which is kind of a rare treat. And those are something I'd like to get. And yeah, just the whole Transformers thing, which I played up really... I laid it on really thick in an RPG where a whole bunch of us were playing as Robot Masters, too.
Well, I've never done that, but certainly Turbo Man is one of my favorites, and it would be great if, one day some company did decide to make an actual toy out of it that actually could transform. That would be fantastic.
Oh my god, that would be... that just tick my wallet.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, Mega Man 7 actually had some pretty darn cool character designs. Turbo Man's one of them. Another one of my favorite Robot Masters would be Junkman. And the thing that I thought was really neat about him is that up until then, pretty much all of the Robot Masters had been very, very symmetrical. Left side pretty much the same as the right side. With Junkman, they did not go that way. He has, very different limbs on either side of his body. And, he really does look like he is kind of assembled from pieces of wreckage. And I just thought that was really, really cool. So for that reason, he is one of my faves.
That's a good pick. Yeah, the symmetry was usually the thing going early on. Mm-hmm. And I guess the Super NES allowed them to explore a bit more with what they could do there.
I guess, although, I'm not really sure. When he turns from left to right, do his animations change? Or do they just mirror it anyway? And be like, we don't care if his right foot is bigger when he's facing this way and then it's his left foot the other way. I don't honestly know.
You know what? I think they mirror it. But considering the game was put together in like 3 months or something anyway, I think we can forgive it.
Yeah, yeah. But I suppose just the fact that you could actually see those details with the power of the Super NES where you probably wouldn't really be able to when you're looking at a Robot Master on the NES, it kind of makes sense they did save something like that for the 16-bit debut of the classic series.
Yeah, because you could really get an idea of the character's design looking at those. And the NES ones, maybe not quite as much so.
Yeah, you did kind of lose some of those details.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the Nintendo Power coverage of Mega Man 4 for the NES?
Well, I can tell you what issue it's in, but I couldn't really tell you anything specific about it.
Oh, if you look it up sometime, the Robot Master art they used in there, it wasn't the stuff from Capcom. They literally just basically kind of drew what the sprites looked like, and just by comparison, it was like, oh my god.
No, I don't remember that. I should dig that up and check it out.
Definitely.
That sounds hilarious. Okay, so what's another one on your list?
Well, given who my favorite was, I'm going to let you try to guess who my second favorite would be.
Nitro Man?
Good guess. And you got it. For pretty much the same kind of reasons. He's like another Transformer or the GoBot to Turbo Man's Transformer or however it works out. And, it's just, I love the fact that he turns into a motorcycle and just speeds around. I really like his stage, too, just the nighttime city thing that's always, kind of a backdrop I'm a sucker for, so that adds to it. But yeah, he and Turbo Man, those are like, my transforming tag team of Robot Master Doom.
Uh-huh. Well, it's another excellent choice. Yeah, I did not pick Nitro Man from Mega Man 10, but I did go with another character from that game, and that is Commando Man. And the reason I'm going with him is just because he is so big and imposing and really looks like, a walking arsenal, which is pretty much what he's supposed to be. And he just looks like a threat. He is a threat. And, if I were, an evil, crazed scientist trying to take over the world, Commando Man is definitely one of the ones I want to have on my team.
I will never get over that name. But,
what, you don't like him just because he's going commando?
That said, yeah, he's definitely a good pick.
Either way, I like him.
And he makes a good segue into my next pick, which would be Searchman from Mega Man 8.
Ah, yes. Yes, those two would be quite a pair. I considered him for my list as well.
Those two or those three?
Well, I'm going to say those two, but obviously you are alluding to the fact that he has two heads.
Two heads, and each seems to have a different personality. One's a commander and the other's a soldier, and it's just a neat thing. Throw in the radar on the on his chest, the big bazooka gun, and the attacks that he throws at you from the bushes and stuff, and I don't know, I just really like him. He's very unique among the Robot Masters.
Yes, yes he is. Yeah, he is pretty cool, and there really aren't any other ones like him. I don't really understand why they decided to make a soldier with two heads like that, but yeah, it is pretty darn nifty.
Well, one thing that I do find interesting, I know we're not getting into the other series, but like many of the classic series Robot Masters, he did get a NetNavi in the Mega Man Battle Network series, mm-hmm. and oddly enough, that seemed like less creative than the Robot Master version when it usually skews the other way.
Yeah, I don't really remember him that much, so I guess that's how unremarkable it was in NetNavi form.
Well, he was cool, don't get me wrong, but just between creativity, one like looks like a military-type guy with a neat, you know, sniper arm cannon, and the other is just, like I said, the radar, the two heads, and the personality, and it's just two completely different things. And in terms of uniqueness, I think Battle Network loses out there, which is, again, a rarity.
Hey, boy. Come on. Okay, well, my next pick is another one from Mega Man 10, and it is Sheep Man. It's probably not a complete coincidence that when I first wrote about Mega Man 10 and, you know, helped, you know, share that game with the world, the two Robot Masters I got to introduce were Commando Man and Sheep Man. Those were the ones that stood out to me right from the very beginning. I loved Commando Man because he was big and imposing, and I loved Sheep Man because he was just so completely ridiculous. I mean, obviously there have been other Robot Masters that were based on animals before, like Snake Man and Toad Man, but Sheep Man? Like, Dr. Wily, why of all creatures would you base an enemy, you know, on a sheep? It just seems so fluffy and non-imposing. And that's what makes him hilarious and ridiculous and one of my favorites.
So tell me, when Capcom showed him off to you, did you ask, okay, for real, guys, like, where's the real Robot Master?
I probably didn't put it quite like that, but I might have said, you know, seriously, really? A sheep man? Yeah, it is quite ridiculous, but that's, again, what I like about it. It's a lot of fun. That's the thing, is that Mega Man is certainly not the most serious series out there, so there is room for ridiculous stuff like that.
There is indeed.
So who else do you have on your list?
Well, almost fittingly to follow a character like Sheep Man is basically the very first Robot Master, Cut Man.
Oh, okay.
Who I can't help but think that Sheep Man would have a vulnerability to, but
That does seem very likely, yes.
But yeah, he was the first Robot Master I remember seeing on the stage select screen. He was the first one stage I visited, the first one I beat.
Mm-hmm. That happens to a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, he's just basically the prototypical Robot Master, and I've just always had a certain fondness for him as a result of that. His stage music is what I consider the equivalent of the like Super Mario Brothers like overworld theme for Mega Man.
Hmm, interesting. All right, solid pick. Yeah, the last Robot Master that I wanted to mention was Crash Man from Mega Man 2. And, you know, I suppose, you know, the fact that Mega Man 2 is my favorite Mega Man game has a lot to do with it. I suppose the fact that the Crash Man stage music is probably my favorite tune out of any Mega Man games has a lot to do with it. But the main reason why Crash Man is one of my favorites is that he really does not want to fight you. He's really a good guy. I mean, you might not know that because he doesn't have hands. He has missiles where his hands should be. But, you know, really, when you fight him, when you get to the boss fight, when you go through his room, you go through those trademark Dr. Wily doors, and you go into his room, if you don't do anything, you just stand there in the corner, there is a fairly high chance that Crash Man will not attack you. And I suppose you're familiar with this, David?
I am, yeah.
Yeah, for some reason, he will just run back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and will not attack. I mean, sometimes he will attack you, But
I think sometimes he'll run into you.
Well, yes. If you get too close to him, then he can collide with you. But otherwise, as long as you don't fire at him and you stay near the wall, he'll just keep running back and forth and he'll turn around before he reaches you. This doesn't always happen. Sometimes he'll attack unprovoked. But I think the fact that he's often a pacifist proves that he's a good guy at heart and really just wants to be friends with Mega Man. And so for that reason, he is one of my favorite robot masters.
And I guess wrapping up on mine would be another from Mega Man 2, which would be Woodman.
Ah, okay. He's cool.
Yeah, he was the, if you can believe it, he was actually the first one I ever beat in Mega Man 2, which, you know.
Oh, I think he was for me as well, actually.
Yeah, I don't know why I picked him, or I almost never go to him first anymore, which is kind of funny.
That's also true with me.
But yeah, I also like the kind of personality he was given, like the way it was shown off in the Archie comics, the way he's friendly towards the woodland creatures that occupy his stage. And just, you know, it's just got an overall kind of neat thing going on. Like, I can't remember if it was actually part of the official lore that he was actually made of wood, but, you know, that's a neat idea in itself. And if you don't count Fireman, who, like, had a projectile with kind of an after effect, he was the one who introduced the shield weapons to the franchise as well.
Yeah, very true. All right, very cool. Let's move along then to our quick lists of favorite Mega Man weapons. This time I'll go first. And I'm going to start with the Black Hole Bomb from Mega Man 9. It's kind of funny that I'm saying this is one of my favorites because this weapon sucks. And I mean that literally because it sucks in enemies. And there's some parts we might use this. You might think, oh, well, it's just this little hole and it just stays in one place. But it's really useful for like sucking up projectiles and things like that. And so it ends up being surprisingly helpful and a really fun and cool weapon to use when you know when and where to use it. So yeah, I'm going with the Black Hole Bomb. What do you got?
Well, let's just get the obvious one out of the way first. Metal Blade.
Yes, the Metal Blade. Yeah, I cannot argue with that one. That is also on my list as well, and it's just super useful. It's incredibly useful. It's probably overpowered, but, you know, you can shoot in 8 directions. It's incredibly useful on a whole number of robot masters, including Metal Man himself when you face him for the second time, and it uses almost no energy. So if I were going to pick my number one favorite Mega Man weapon, it would absolutely be the Metal Blade. So is that the same reason you like it?
Yeah, pretty much. It's just complete utility weapon that, you know, just...
It slices, it dices, it chops up robot masters in 95 different ways.
Yeah, basically. I mean, even in other games like Wily Wars, it's like, you know, good on other characters as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite the versatile weapon. Okay, since that's both of our picks, why don't you go on to another one then?
Yeah, so going back to space-themed weapons, the Astro Crush is a favorite of mine from Mega Man 8.
Okay.
I like Astro Man himself as part of the deal, but it's just a nice one of those full-screen effect weapons, and calling down a literal meteor shower to just smash the heck out of everything in sight is just, you know, it's always fun to do, even if its number of uses is a little bit limited.
Okay, cool. I'm going to, you know, follow on with that theme. And, you know, maybe this weapon is the opposite of the Astro Crush. I'm going with the Gravity Hold from Mega Man 5. And, you know, normally I'm not a big fan of these, you know, screen-filling field-of-effect weapons, especially one that doesn't even really have much of a visual effect associated with it. You sort of get a flash on the screen. But the thing I love about it is sometimes in Mega Man, these aerial enemies can be really annoying, but, you know, you use the Gravity Hold in their vicinity, and they just go flying off the top of the screen, and you never see them again. And if that doesn't work, it might smash them into the floor. So, yeah, I think it's hilarious to use the Gravity Hold on enemies. It feels like, you know, giving those enemies their just desserts.
Yeah, that's always a trip.
What's your next one?
I'm going to say the Laser Trident from Mega Man 9.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, it's not quite as versatile or overpowering as the Metal Blade, but it's probably the closest thing that game has to it. It uses a small amount of energy, has a nice piercing effect, and it does a fair chunk of damage to enemies. More than your Buster, but maybe not as much as a Metal Blade.
Okay.
It's a nice balancing of the concept.
Fair enough. I'm also going to pick another weapon from Mega Man 9, but I'm going with the Hornet Chaser. The Hornet Chaser is where Mega Man, you know, shoots out these bees, basically, and then they home in on enemies. And certainly there have been other weapons that home in on enemies, but the cool thing about this one is that it also can grab power-ups and bring them back to you. So that's the reason I give this one a nod over other weapons with similar capabilities.
Not the bees! Not the bees! Yes, the bees.
Oh, yes, the bees.
And, yeah, that's a good one as well, which, incidentally, if I remember correctly, is also useful for getting the one that I just mentioned, the laser trident, so bonus. Nice 1-2 punch there.
All right, which one do you have next?
My next one is another from Mega Man 9, the Jewel Satellite. And basically, there have been a lot of shields over the course of the Classic series and other series for that matter, some of them more useful than others. This one really seems more effective than a lot of others, particularly the way it actually deflects some enemy attacks and ricochets it back into them so that they take their own damage.
Definitely a cool effect.
It's comparatively stronger than like other weapons like the Plant Barrier and Leaf Shield as a result. Like the Leaf Shield, you can't even move while you have it equipped or else you're going to throw it. Skull Barrier, it's not as powerful. It doesn't, I mean, it kind of blocks some things, but, you know, it like just blocks one shot. But the Jewel Satellite, it, you know, just does what you almost expect a shield weapon to do.
All right, makes sense to me. All right, I guess that brings me to my last one. And, you know, normally I don't really think of these weapons in, you know, any particular order of favorites, but, you know, there are two that stand out, you know, above and beyond the rest. And one of those was the Metal Blade we already talked about, and the other one is Elecman's Thunder Beam. You know, in Mega Man 2, it was great to be able to throw things in eight directions, but in Mega Man 1, you didn't have the capability, but you had the Thunder Beam, which could shoot in three directions. It went up, it went down, it went forward, and it covered a very wide area of the screen. And so it may not have been quite as overpowered as the Metal Blade, but, you know, this was like the next best thing. And, you know, it was really nasty when Elecman used it on you. It could take you out pretty darn fast. But when you had it in your power, it felt really, really good. And it was, you know, very helpful. You know, you could even use it to smash blocks. If you didn't have Gutsman's power yet, you could use it to actually blow away chunks of the screen. So it was a really, really awesome weapon. By far away my favorite in Mega Man 1, and certainly one of my favorites in the entire series.
The Thunder Beam's definitely iconic, especially for the trick associated with it and taking out the Yellow Devil. But even without that, which several versions do go without, it packs quite a punch. And it's a real lifesaver when it helps you get through Gutsman's stage with the Magnet Beam without having to beat Gutsman, who you would normally need to get the beam to get through Gutsman in the first place.
Yep, this is true. Okay, so what's your last pick for favorite weapon?
As you said, it gets kind of hard after the first few to start, like, picking favorites, but I guess one that I like is Searchman's weapon, the homing sniper, because, I mean, just who doesn't love a good homing missile, a good homing shot?
That's a good point. I mean, I guess the reason that I went with a different homing weapon over that one is because, you know, you lose the lock-on when you get hit.
This is true.
But still, not a bad choice. Not a bad choice. I will mention one more. I have a runner-up, and that is the charge kick from Mega Man 5. I just love the idea of being able to actually add an offensive twist to Mega Man's familiar slide maneuver, because, you know, before, when you're sliding, it doesn't really, you know, do anything. All you can do is take damage, but the charge kick turned that around and actually let you dish it out as well. You know, in practice, I don't know, it probably didn't end up being as useful as I would have liked, but I love it conceptually, so consider that my runner-up.
If I may add a runner-up as well, the top spin gets way too much hate.
Ah.
In the right hands, it is absolutely devastating, but I think what's happened is there's a glitch in the game where basically if you're using it and you don't use it just right, then like it completely saps the energy with like no visible effect.
Yeah, that does happen in those boss fights on occasion.
If you know what you're doing, and I think even in Wily Wars, they've got it fixed so that, like, you know, it's actually a pretty devastating maneuver. And there are some videos on YouTube you can find about just how potent the weapon actually is.
Yeah, and much like the slide kick, it turns what's normally a benign maneuver, that being jumping, into an offensive tactic. So, yeah, I think that's a really cool choice also.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that has been a whole lot of Mega Man to discuss. Before we totally wrap things up here, just one more question for you, David. You know, it's been 30 years. There's been lots of Mega Man for us to play and to enjoy. Just tell me, what does Mega Man mean to you?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I guess I just owe a lot to Mega Man. I got into writing because of Mega Man. I met my wife because of Mega Man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just, I've... had a lot of opportunities and got to do a lot of things because of Mega Man, and, you know, met a lot of people, and I don't know, it's hard to imagine my life without Mega Man, and I'm not trying to say that in a, like, you know, I am such a huge fan kind of way, but just the impact that Mega Man has had on my life is considerable, and it would be hard to imagine where I would be now if not for Mega Man.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad I asked. For me, you know, as I said earlier, part of it is that Mega Man has sort of taught me not to judge a game by its cover, quite literally. You know, you don't really know what's on the inside until you actually play it. It's also taught me, you know, that a character can transcend genres. It shouldn't just be pigeonholed as to being one thing. You know, the classics are my favorite, but, you know, Mega Man has done well, you know, moving into 3D and moving into other genres, and that's an important lesson. Also, it's just a series that has always been there for me, both personally as well as professionally. I mean, not quite as personal as it was for you, David, apparently, but, you know, the fact that I got to, you know, be there and share in the debuts of Mega Man 9 and Mega Man 10, and, of course, ill-fated Mega Man Legends 3 has always been of great significance to me and has always been a high point in my career as a gaming writer. Going back even further, I even got to write a fairly comprehensive history of the character for Play Magazine that a lot of Mega Man fans seem to remember fondly. Yeah, Mega Man has been there through a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right on. Or should I say rock on?
Yeah. It's been a good 30 years. It's had its ups and downs, but far more good than bad, and I certainly hope there'll be another 30 years for everyone's favorite robotic blue hero. And with that said, I do believe that finally brings this week's big topic to a close. So I suppose we should be wrapping up this episode of the podcast.
Sounds like a plan.
But, you know, before we go, we do have time for one more thing, and that is, of course, a dramatic reading. This time, once again, continuing the adventures of Captain Nintendo from the pages of Nintendo Power magazine. Previously, an explosion at Nintendo headquarters caused Brett Randles to be transformed into Captain Nintendo, but it also caused video game villains to come to life in the real world. Now, armed with a letter opener, Captain Nintendo has joined forces with Link to put a stop to Ganon and the Mother Brain. And now the saga continues. Cap grabbed the letter opener and charged toward the door. As he passed by the stationary Mother Brain, a drifting bubble seemed to deliberately swoop down against his shoulder, injecting a searing pain. Reflexively, Captain Nintendo turned and fired an electrical blast at the Mother Brain, but hit her pedestal instead, with no result. Jumping as high as he could, Brett fired another blast, this time directly into the Mother Brain. Though she seemed to absorb the blast, Cap could tell she had been affected. Smoke that, witch! He knew he'd made some progress, but there was a more pressing problem in the parking lot. Cap shot out of the door, dreading the destruction he feared had already taken place. He was relieved to find that Link had thus far managed to dodge the fireballs in the unimpeded freedom of the parking lot, and as yet no real damage had occurred. Flume! Link, out of breath, succumbed to two more fireballs, which brought him to his knees. Captain Nintendo, too, had to steady himself as he fell to one knee from the loss of energy. They would not survive another such attack, and they both knew it. Hit the next fireballs with your sword, Link! Shouted Cap. Link said not a word, but nodded his comprehension. A split second later, another pair of fireballs were streaming toward him. With perfect timing, Link raised his sword, divided the flaming globes, and for a third time, the savage Ganon became momentarily visible. But this time, Captain Nintendo was ready. Just as Ganon began to come into view, Cap lunged toward him with the letter opener, unerringly connecting with his target. And that's where we're stopping it this week.
I love that story.
What will happen next? Will that be enough to finish off Ganon? Will that be enough to finish off Mother Brain? Only Nintendo Power and the millions of people who've already read that story 20-something years ago know for sure.
20 sounds kind of like a lowball there, doesn't it? I think we're pushing 30.
It's getting close. Yes, it's probably close to 29 years. So 20-something is not wrong, but yes, it is close to 30. But yeah, we'll just have to come back with the exciting conclusion, or at least close to the conclusion, in an upcoming episode. And that does it for us for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at Chris The Hoff, and you can find David at LBD_NightTrain. That's NYTETRAYN. You can also check out his work at the Mega Man Network. That is themmnetwork.com. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com. And if you're feeling up to it, my regular co-host, Pete, a.k.a. at Burly Red Yeti, has been having some tough times lately, so feel free to send him some cheer on Twitter. Thanks for listening, everybody, and happy holidays as well. For myself, David Oxford,
LBD out. Peace.
And Mega Man's replacement, Beck.
Aw, nuts.
We will see you next time.